How many times have you bought headphones or earbuds and been disappointed with the way they sound, their audio quality? Or maybe you've bought a pair and you were surprised that, wow, how good they sound. Well, Sean Olive is the Acoustic Research Fellow at Harman International, and he's joining Chris Tobin and me. He's doing headphone qualitative measurements that mean something for both consumers and for manufacturers toward better audio from our wearables. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Lavvo and the Crystal Clear Virtual Radio Console. Crystal Clear is the console with a multi-touch touchscreen interface. By BSW Broadcast Supply Worldwide, broadcast gear from people you trust. And by Direct Current, broadcast e-newsletter. Get Direct Current in your inbox every Thursday with technical pointers putting you and your facility at an advantage. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Delighted to be here. Chris Tobin, our co-host, is here as well. Well, he's there. We'll go to him in just a minute. This is the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to, on this show, the microphone all the way to your Mickey Mouse ears or whatever it is you stick in your ear. Or maybe you've got some good old-fashioned Cost Pro 4 AA's. Wow. We got a guest on that's going to tell us all about these and much, much more and how we evaluate them coming up. Hey, let's check in with Chris Tobin. Now, Chris, you're not in New Jersey, are you?
No, I'm not in New Jersey. Today, I am in Bayside, Queens, New York. I'm at a sports pub called Press 195. They've been good enough to allow us access to their back room, which is actually an outdoor patio. It's enclosed for today. And I'm enjoying a nice brew from a place, from a brewery called the Trinity Brew. It's a very nice one ear, so I thought it would be very appropriate for what we're doing. It's a naked Saison. It's very tasty, very refreshing, as the bartender has told me. Sorry, we have a live audience behind me as well, in front of me as well, so it's pretty good. So we're having a good time. It's as you can see, it's Press 195.
You know, every week, Chris, you tell us about your connectivity. It often involves a ketchup bottle, but maybe not today. What's your connectivity today to be with us?
It's just for the Inside Baseball crew, Andrew Zarian, who's the founder of this network. I was telling him on the car ride over, I said, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to be asked about the ketchup bottle mount for the Wi-Fi or Wi-Fi, depending on who you talk to, and I won't have one to show. So today it's actually a 4G MiFi Verizon connection. It's LTE. It's actually, let me see if I can do this right. If you look at this, that little black spot, that is the MiFi attached to the window pole. So it may not be a ketchup bottle, but it's definitely a creative mount.
Is it hanging by a thread, or did you bring some gaffer's tape for that?
No, it's pressure. It's actually the vinyl window. It's a vinyl plastic window with a metal pole in the center. It's pushing against it. So it's a pressure mount.
Sure. Okay. A pressure mount. All right.
And well, that's Chris, where I'm at. Just so we make sure we do this right. Product placement. Advertisement. Yeah. Here we go. All right.
I have been there too, courtesy of our network founder, Andrew Zarian. And in fact, I may be there again around the first week of March, if Andrew will have me. Me and my wife are going to go visit Andrew and baby and wife and studio and all that.
Oh, well, then we're going to have are you coming in like on a Wednesday night through the weekend type of thing?
I'm coming in on a Friday night and staying through sometime on Monday.
All right, fine. We'll just have to go out and have fun.
Yeah, we won't be doing the show. Well, that's some pressure taken off. We can just enjoy each other's company without having to worry about producing a show.
Pressure? I guess I'm not drinking. I'm sorry. Am I under pressure for this show this week in Radio Tech? I must have missed something.
Hey,
I didn't get the memo.
I got to take a shower for the show. Come on, man. I'm under pressure.
I'm taking a shower, but right now it's a hell of a shower here. It's just too much of this beer.
Chris, you're being a little uncharacteristic. Hey, we have kept our guests waiting long enough. When I first heard about this gentleman, I thought, oh my gosh, we've got to try to get him on the show because our listeners care about this, and it's wonderfully, wonderfully good research that he's doing. Let's bring on Sean Olive. Sean is the Acoustic Research Fellow at Harman International. Welcome in, Sean. Glad you're here.
Thanks, Kirk. It's good to be here.
So this title is pretty interesting, Acoustic Research Fellow. What does that mean you get to do?
Pretty well anything I want to do, which is a great title. You know, when you get to this stage in your career, basically it's for people who don't like managing people and just like to do cool stuff. So I get to, you know, focus on cool stuff.
Wow, I need to see if I can get the word fellow attached to my title. That sounds good. So we're here to talk about your research in measuring the audio properties of headphones and in-ear headphones and such, so that we can actually have some comparison. And could you give, I mean, if you're talking to somebody in an elevator about your research, what do you tell them? Give us a little preview, and we'll delve into it after our first commercial.
Sure. So really what we're focusing on is figuring out what people like in a headphone in terms of sound quality, and then trying to correlate that with acoustic measurements so that engineers have basically design guidelines, and we know from a measurement whether it's going to sound good or bad. That's basically the short version.
So we may have some actual statistics to compare either before we purchase or to compare what we've purchased with. It's going to be good. Sean and I got to chat for a little while earlier today, and I can tell this is going to be an exciting, exciting show. But we got to pay a bill or two, and I want to welcome in our first sponsor, and I had that written down here. Good golly, where'd it go? Oh, yeah, Lavo. Lavo is one of our sponsors, and Lavo, they've been around a long time, and you may know them for television consoles and live event consoles. By the way, let me back up a little bit. A lot of you may be new to this show, especially if you're tuning in for Sean Olive, as I know a lot of you are. Well, a lot of you may know me or not know me. I've been a broadcast engineer. I've been an on-air guy for a long time, the host of this podcast, done TV weather for quite a while. Well, what you may not know is that I've also sold broadcast equipment internationally. And that job took me literally all around the world several times. And I've seen a lot of broadcasting in a lot of countries, and I've seen the different imaginative ways that people do things. It's pretty fascinating. I'm excited to introduce you to our sponsor, Lavo, L-A-W-O, and their website is lawo.com, lavo.com. Lavo's, they're famous around the world for television, audio, and video, especially for high-profile event coverage like the Olympics and World Cup soccer and the Grammy Awards. When the broadcast is mission-critical, you're pretty likely to find a Lavo console there. Now, you wouldn't believe how it's built. I mean, it is really over-engineered. Lots of redundancy. Backups have backups. There's no do-overs in live event broadcasting, and dead air can kill your career. Well, you may be thinking, why should I care? I'm not doing TV. I'm a radio guy like most of the listeners and viewers of the show. Well, you know, us radio guys, we hate dead air even more than TV guys, which is why broadcasters like NPR, the CBC in Canada, the BBC, to name a few, buy Lavo radio consoles. Yeah, being this involved in TV and radio around the world means that Lavo thinks about the future a lot, too. And everyone knows that all types of media are converging into a common IP delivery platform. Lavo's ready for that with broadcast gear that can handle audio, video, and control of every studio device using a single off-the-shelf computer network. And after that, well, virtualization is on the way. Broadcasting from the cloud. Hey, a lot less gear in your station. Lavo's building those tools right now. So if bulletproof reliability, five nines of uptime, and being future-proof are important to you, check out Lavo. And if you would, when you go to Lavo's website, type in lawo.com/twirt, T-W-I-R-T. Yeah, they're checking up on us, and they're checking up on you. So let them know that you heard about their ad on Twirt. Lavo.com/twirt. Thanks a lot, Lavo, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, Chris Tobin is along. I'm Kirk Harnack. I work for the Telos Alliance. Chris does work with a jazz station, plus a lot of consulting work in the New York City area and sometimes outside. And our guest is Sean Olive, who's acoustic research fellow at Harman International. Let's get right back into it. Sean, what piqued my interest is your work in quantifying how headphones and earbuds and in-ear monitors, how those things sound. So what got you started on this path to measuring this?
Yeah, well, I mean, my previous background was in loudspeaker research, and for about 25 years or maybe 20 years, I worked basically on the same problem, trying to quantify loudspeaker sound quality based on measurements. And a lot of the pioneering work was done by a guy named Dr. Floyd Toole, whom I met at the National Research Council in Canada. And he joined Harman in 91, and I was hired in 93 to basically start doing listening tests as the manager of subjective evaluation. So we really focused on loudspeakers, and up until about 2010, and at that point, we already were able to measure a loudspeaker and predict its sound quality with about 86% accuracy. So the work in loudspeaker science is pretty mature, but then suddenly with the explosion of headphones, with the iPhone, smartphones, we started to see people buying headphones like crazy. And when we started measuring them and listening to them, it was very clear that the science was 20 years behind loudspeakers. And if you looked at the literature, there hardly anyone had done listening tests on headphones with that, any kind of scientific listening tests. And there was really no agreement amongst manufacturers, reviewers. They were all over the map. And it reminded me a lot of loudspeakers in the early 1980s. So for me, it was sort of low-hanging fruit to focus on, first of all, do people agree on what makes a headphone sound good? And then secondly, is there a way to measure it and predict how it sounds?
Okay, so here's a two-part question. If you could take away the top two or three things about loudspeakers that define how good they sound to people, what would those things be? And is that information transferable to measuring headphones?
Well, yeah, the answer is yes. The top two things in a loudspeaker are frequency response and frequency response. And in order to characterize how good it sounds in a room, you need to do a lot of measurements around the loudspeaker. Mm. So, and you need to do it in a controlled environment like an anechoic chamber. So we do 70 measurements all around the speaker, and then we try to characterize the direct sound that arrives first, and then the early reflections, and then the later reflections. And what people like is very accurate neutral sound. The flatter the frequency response is on axis, the more they like it. And then the off-axis sounds that arrive later have to be equally smooth and extended, but not necessarily flat. So smoothness, flatness of frequency response is really paramount. And the same is true with a headphone we're finding. In fact, we're finding that the headphones that people prefer tend to have no resonances, and they tend to simulate a good loudspeaker calibrated in a good listening room.
Wow. Okay. I've got a question again back on the speakers. I didn't realize that this would play into it so well. If you're in an anechoic chamber and you mentioned reflections, I would imagine you certainly have to take that into account in a typical listening environment. But in an anechoic chamber, what kind of reflections are they? Are there self-reflections from the speaker itself and self-resonances or something else I'm not considering?
Well, actually, an anechoic chamber has no echoes, so there are no reflections. And that's necessary because it allows you to separate the room from the loudspeaker. Of course, when you go into a room, you're going to get reflections, but it's in most rooms, it's only the first few reflections, the first three or four that have a significant effect on your perception. So we first measure it anechoically, so we know what exactly the speaker is doing, and we can then separate the room from the speaker.
Ah, okay. All right. Now, so you mentioned headphones now, and I guess we'll focus on that. You mentioned one of the first things you mentioned was self-resonance. Well, of course, frequency response, that's the key thing. And when we buy headphones, speakers, microphones, we get these frequency response graphs. Usually for the kind of stuff I can afford, it's pre-printed. In other words, it's not measured for the one that I'm buying. It's for the model. And I see, rather large variations, 10, 12, 15 dB across the a reasonable band. Why do we see so much variation in frequency response in these transducers?
Yeah, well, usually these variations are they're either from resonances or maybe some kind of acoustical interference. So if you have a woofer sound coming from a woofer and a tweeter, they may arrive at different times, and if they're overlapping each other, you're going to see some interference. But typically the kind of variations you see are due to nonlinearities in the driver, either in the mechanical design. The transducer is only operational in a linear fashion over a certain range. So, the trick is picking good transducers that have minimal resonances, and then building a good crossover so that they're minimized outside their operating band and not part of the sound.
Now, do most headphones that folks would buy have just one driver per ear, or are they sometimes multi-driver?
Yeah, I mean, most of the over-the-ear on-ear headphones have a single transducer. And, you know, the challenge is to be able to operate in a linear fashion over the entire audio range from 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz. And that's challenging because, you know, speakers have several drivers that operate, that separate the audio band. And you know, it's much easier to do, I think, in a loudspeaker than a headphone. Headphones that start to break up, you know, around 3-4 kilohertz or higher. So you see a lot of variations at higher frequencies in headphones. That's really where they're challenged.
When you say break up, what does that mean exactly?
So anytime you have a transducer, ideally it should operate in a pistonic fashion. Mm-hmm. But at a higher frequency, you start to see different modes in the driver, and you can have rocking modes, and different parts of the diaphragm are operating in and out of phase, and it's no longer acting like a piston, and it'll create these irregularities that you see in the frequency response.
There's got to be some, I would think there's some similarity in headphones that you measure that do as well as we know how to do. Are there some similarities in their construction and materials, or the spider, you know, the thing that holds it all together? Are there similarities there, or do quite different designs can work pretty well, as well as each other?
Well, a lot of headphones, or most headphones, don't have a suspension. So the on a speaker, you have a diaphragm. There's a voice coil, and then there's it has to be attached to a frame, and there's basically a spider that keeps it all aligned. But in headphones, we don't have this. So one of the first things we found was that when you measure a typical headphone, a dynamic headphone, it'll have higher distortion at lower levels and less distortion at higher levels. And that's completely the opposite in a typical loudspeaker. And it's because of these, you know, this lack of a real suspension, I believe.
So when I turn my headphones up, I'm actually tuning for less distortion?
Yeah, that's what we found. I mean, up to a certain point, and then beyond a certain level, you're going to get a lot of distortion.
Wow,
But one of the things we found is that when we compare headphones, the distortion levels are generally low enough that they're not really a factor in your preferences. Of course, there's always exceptions, but by and large, they're fairly linear devices at the levels that we listen to them.
I'm a little curious about efficiency of the drivers. You know, years ago, you would go into a lot of major market radio stations and find a Crown D75 amplifier as the headphone amp, which I always thought was just crazy, but some people did it. Maybe they thought it lasted a long time. It certainly could overpower any jock's loss of hearing. What can you tell us about efficiency of headphones today, and is efficiency a good thing to a point, or can it result in poorer operation if they're too efficient?
I mean, generally, the more efficient they are, the better. It's really a factor when you're driving it with a smartphone or a portable device where battery life is really critical. So ideally, you want the headphone to be easy to drive and fairly efficient so that you get longer playing times from your smartphone. But, you know, if you're at home listening to your stereo system and you have a 1,000-watt receiver or whatever, it's not really a factor. And that's why we these big, expensive, large audiophile headphones they're fine at home, and that's where they're used. But for portable applications, they're not really efficient enough.
Yeah, there's not enough volume there. Well, I guess we should talk about, because we did before the show, and this is really what piqued my curiosity, is how do you measure headphones? I mean, speakers, okay, I understand the work you did there, and you got some rigor into measuring different sizes, different kinds of speakers in a chamber and see how well they would perform. Maybe you spun them around while using a test microphone, but headphones, that seems like a thing that, because the sound of a headphone changes as to whether it's pressed on your ear or not, how hard it's over your ear, if it's in the right place on your ear, an in-ear monitor does too. You know, mine don't sound right until they're sitting just exactly right, and then they sound good. So talk to us about your discoveries along the way of how to measure headphones.
Sure. So, we started off with measuring on-ear or around-ear headphones, and, here's an example. This is a phone that goes around your ears because the cups are pretty large. And, this is an open-back headphone. So the nice thing about an open-back is it's not very critical how good it seals on the ear because the sound can come out the back. So as far as the seal goes, it's not critical in terms of the bass response. So for these types of headphones, this is very heavy, but I'm going to attempt to lift it. It's made by a company called Grass, and you can see that there's ears on either side. These are special ears.
Oh my goodness.
And if I were to open this up inside, there'd be a coupler and a microphone for each ear. And so you put the headphone on that device, and this is what a coupler looks like. It's called a 7-Eleven coupler, and it has a standard volume, and the volume simulates the volume of a typical ear canal. And it also simulates the acoustic impedance that the headphone's going to see when you put it on your ear. So inside that device are two of these, one for each ear, and then there's a microphone that's inserted. So that's the first step. And when you put these headphones on the ear, the first thing you'll find, you take it off, you put it back on, and you get a different response, particularly at higher frequencies. And so the repeatability of the measurement is really a challenge. With a speaker and an echoic chamber, you can set it up and get pretty repeatable results. But, above 1 or 2 kilohertz, there's a lot of variation in the measurement. So what we do is we'll typically do a measurement, put it back on the device, and do it 5 times, and we'll take an average of those 5 measurements. Now, one of the critical things we found early on is my coworker Todd Welty found that the standard industry pinna that you put these onto are too stiff compared to a human ear. So often the seal wouldn't be very good because the ear is just it's made out of a hard rubber and it's just too stiff to give and doesn't have the right compliance, so you get an erroneous measurement, and typically it affects the bass. So you may get a misreading in how much bass the headphone's producing.
Wow. Yeah. And so I've noticed. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say. So we did a study where we actually measured headphones on humans. We put little microphones inside their ears. And that gave us a baseline on what the typical fit is. And then Todd took the standard pinna. He made a 3D model of it, and he just kept modifying it until he got the same results as he got on humans. And then he replicated these ears on a 3D printer. He got he varied the material, the viscosity of it, until it basically matched the compliance of what he was measuring on humans. So we now think we have pretty accurate measurements of headphones in terms of the bass performance.
So did when you say pinna, are you referring to the shape of the cartilage of our ear? Is that it, what that is?
Yeah, basically the whole fleshy part of your ear up to the entrance of the ear canal. Yeah.
So he took the standard one that wasn't quite accurate and modified it until it became accurate. Does it still look, is it just like a human ear?
Yeah, I mean that this is it. This is what it looks like here. So it looks pretty much like the standard IEC pinna, but it's been modified to in terms of how compliant it is. And if you touch it, it feels, it moves like your own ear. And if you compared this to the standard Penta, it wouldn't move as easily. So what this means, especially when you're measuring smaller headphones, super oral headphones would sit on the ear. Typically, if the ear is too stiff, it won't fit properly. The cushion won't mold around the ear, and you'll get inaccurate low-frequency measurements.
Okay. So, the low frequencies become sensitive to this. Different people have different shaped ears, small and large, and all different shapes right around there. Does this have a big effect? Of course, people get used to their eyes, their ears. They become totally accustomed to the way their body works. Would that have a big effect on how people hear?
Yeah, I think, and a lot of people think this, that people are born with different shaped ears, but eventually they adapt and, they localize sound based on these, the shape of their ears to some extent. And over time, they adapt to the shape of their ears. So it's not really that we all hear sounds differently. We're more or less hearing the same thing because we adapt. And there's been studies where people have put on prosthetic ears or changed the shape of their ears with fake ears. And after a while, they start to learn and adapt. The brain is very plastic, and we can learn new cues. And soon it's just like they're your own ears.
Yeah, we're going to break for commercial pretty soon, but I want to get back to this notion of frequency response being the absolute most important thing. Sean, I always imagined, and apparently wrongly so, unless there's a little secret that you can let us in on, that there might be something else besides just frequency response. There might, well, of course, there's if there's multi-driver, there's phase between the drivers, and you want them to be in phase, I suppose. But is there any other thing that plays an important role in how we perceive the quality of the sound from one headphone versus another?
I really think we're talking about one driver, so there's not multiple drivers. We've actually done experiments where we binaurally recorded a headphone, so we were including all of the magnitude, the phase, and any nonlinear distortions. So that, that's the other factor. Nonlinear distortion is when it's contributing other frequencies that aren't there in the original recording. And they compared these recordings to an actual virtual version of the headphone where we're only simulating the magnitude or the frequency response. And people couldn't really tell the difference. In fact, the correlation between the virtual headphone ratings and the actual headphone ratings was 0.98, so almost 98%.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So phase, if there's enough phase distortion, we can definitely hear it, but there doesn't seem to be a factor in headphones. Headphones are mostly non-minimum phase devices, so any changes in the frequency response will cause a change in the time response or the phase response, and that's a well-known mathematical relationship called the Fourier transform. So phase and time and frequency are mathematically related, and you can get one from the other when they're operating at a minimum phase relationship.
I got to ask about a term that you used earlier before we break, and Chris Tobin, you may have some insight on this as well, but I want to. We'll first hear what Sean has to say. As broadcast engineers, we're familiar with the term impedance because we deal with it a lot in radio frequency technology. But I'd never heard of acoustic impedance. Sean, could you let us in on what acoustic impedance is?
Yeah, it's basically similar as electrical impedance, except it's acoustical related and. Depending on the volume of air in the ear canal, and depending on how good the seal is of the headphone, it can affect how hard or difficult it is for the driver to move. So, if you have an open back headphone that emits sound both in the ear and outside the ear, then the acoustic impedance has very little effect on the headphone. But when you have a closed headphone, the impedance or the volume of air behind the headphone, it does affect how it's going to perform. It's not a huge effect, but it's definitely measurable.
Wow. Okay. Chris, man, you've been real quiet. Have you finished off the beer yet?
No, wait, are you kidding? A drink like this, you savor the moment. Well, no, you know, listening to the talk about the headphones, impedance, and just everything about it, and the binaural recordings, which I've done binaural recordings, and it's interesting how your brain does interpret the three-dimensional, I'll call it, effect of binaural recordings, and it's pretty wild. The curious question I have, and I'm a fan of the K240 headphones that everybody knows about, but not for studio environment. It's kind of tough to use in there. But one of the most popular headphones, aside from the COS 4AAA, I think it is, the green ones everybody knows, the Sony MDR series. Now, if I'm trying to select headphones for a broadcast environment, what would you say from your experience or the experiments or the measurements and testing you've done would be a reasonable approach? Because I work with a lot of announcers who they hear the difference. And as Kirk pointed, I work with a jazz radio station. I work at a jazz station that very particular about what they hear in the headphones, what they hear in the monitor speakers. And we just did a jazz recording yesterday of a band. So, you know, the sets of speakers we were using, we did two different sets for near field, far field. How does a broadcast engineer go about looking for headphones for a relatively, how would you say, very broad studio environment in the broadcast world?
Yeah, I would say that in a broadcast environment, you probably want a closed back headphone because you want to isolate yourself from all the background noise. So that'd probably be the first thing. And then from that point, I think in broadcast, you want something very, very neutral, very accurate, and something that translates from what you're producing in the broadcast studio to what a listener might hear at home, you know, with a good set of speakers or headphones. So that's, in other words, I think the frequency response is critical. And of course, you want to be able to hear any kind of distortion or, it has to go down low because you want to be able to hear hum or any kind of problems where the studio or where the recording is happening.
Excellent. That's what I thought. One other question regarding headphones. Now, something I've done for many years, and it involves bone conduction. I hope I understand this correctly from the papers I've read. I've placed inside the headphone circuit a phase reversal switch for some folks because I have some announcers who hear the music, the voice in the headphones, and they say, something doesn't sound right. I flip the phase reversal switch on the headphone feed, and all of a sudden they love what they're hearing. Is it safe or accurate to say that bone conduction is not the same for everybody, and there is a chance that, as you pointed out, frequency response, amplitude, phase, or the Fourier transform, we can actually have phase reversal physically in our ears, not know it until we're listening on a pair of headphones that sort of bear that out. So a good quality set of headphones.
Yeah, I mean, there's two kinds of phase reversal. There's absolute polarity change, and then there's relative. And obviously, the most audible one is relative. If the left channel is out of phase relative to the left channel, you're going to get some bass cancellation, and it's going to sound very strange. But I think what you're talking about is absolute polarity. Yeah. And there's not been a lot of research in this area. It's controversial, but there's some indication that we're most sensitive to it. Listening to clicks or very impulsive sounds, and when you add room reflections, we become more or less phase deaf because it sort of scrambles the phase of the signal. So it makes sense that we would be most audible to this kind of phase distortion over a headphone or in a very dead room. So, but most people, I challenge whether they can hear absolute polarity because it's very difficult to hear.
No, I agree. I mean, when I've done the what I call bone conduction flipping, the phase flipping, somebody, they hear something, whatever it is, it's simply, it's empirical. It definitely is not something I've researched and, you know, I can pinpoint with accuracy. I just found it interesting that from time to time, flip the switch, don't tell anybody what I've done. And they say, it sounds better. I'm more comfortable with it. I can do my read. I could talk. Kirk, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, yeah. And maybe
bone conduction is probably not the proper term.
I think the big difference here is, Chris, you're talking about people listening to themselves. Typically,
well, yeah,
themselves,
sure.
And as opposed to most of the research, I would guess that Sean, you're doing is people not listening to themselves, but listening to pre-recorded music and voice and things like that. So a person who's performing, like as I am now, as Chris is now, Sean, as you are, I want to hear more me as long as I can still hear you. And if I flip the absolute phase of going in my headphone, it's either going to get louder or softer, depending on how it combines at the frequencies I'm interested in with my bone conduction. And so I want to hear me louder. And so if you flip it one way or another, I'm going to hear it louder or softer in my own brain. And I think that's what Chris is alluding to, because we deal with talent.
Yes. Right. Well, I just thought I'd bring it up as a conversational piece. I don't expect that the research would be talking about people hearing themselves. I understand that. I'm just curiously throwing that out there as what if, or is there any, has there been any conversation about it? I don't expect it to be a total, you know, paper design and here's what we've discovered when you listen to yourself and what to expect. I'm just thinking in terms of when I'm working with folks, that's the first thing that happens. Then the second part is they enjoy what they hear. So I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious, do you tell people when you change the polarity, or is it sort of done without them knowing, and then they say, oh, that's much better?
Without them knowing it, and they say it's much better.
Okay.
I do not allude to anything.
Okay, so that's a good test, because it's more or less blind, and because people are in audio are very powerful to suggestions, and it's been shown
yes.
that if you tell them it costs $1,000 more or it was made in Switzerland, they'll think it sounds better, and you can actually measure it on their brain waves. The areas of brain that are associated with pleasure will light up. So unfortunately, we can make the world's best headphone, but at the end of the day, it's marketing and advertising, and how much you charge is definitely a factor.
That is so true. That is so true.
My goodness. We're at the midpoint of our show, and I need to remind our listeners and viewers you're listening to or watching This Week in Radio Tech, episode 337, with our guest, Sean Olive. He is the Acoustic Research Fellow at Harman International. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Chris Tobin on this show. We've got a message from our friends at BSW, Broadcast Supply Worldwide. We're coming right back. Stay tuned.
Hello, I'm Phil McCavity. Week after week since 1973, it's been BSW's honor selling products to broadcasters worldwide for the best possible prices and the speediest delivery. Now, let us show you how the magic happens.
Welcome to the fictitious BSW Sale Factory. This is where all the products that are put on sale are staged and, once ordered, are placed on high-speed conveyors.
Sound great and save big with the Wheatstone Aurora X1 FM HD Audio Processor. Just $49.99.
No other sale factory in the world is as modernly equipped with all the latest technology than that of BSW. Here, a trained computer technician programs the BSW Remulac 4000A computer to make sure the products for sale are available in our warehouse, ensuring same-day shipping.
You'll know when the mic is hot with the Mic Light Indicator. Fits your OC White Pro Booms, only $99 each.
At the BSW Sale Factory, workers are on double speed to route your emails and direct your calls to our happy sales representatives.
Buy two Audio-Technica BPH-S1 broadcast headsets. Get another one free. That's three for the price of two. Call BSW today for this special deal.
Operating a sale factory requires exact timing and product planning to make sure the products you want to buy are priced low and ready for immediate shipment. On behalf of the entire BSW staff, thank you for watching, and don't forget to buy stuff.
I got to hand it to Tim Schweiger and his marketing crew. They're pretty good. BSW, Broadcast Supply Worldwide. Yeah, they great ads. Next month, they're going to make me read the ad. But this month, they had that fun. All right. Our show, episode 337 of This Week in Radio Tech, talking to Sean Olive with Harman International about measuring headphones and what that means. My goodness, I got so involved in the ad, I forgot the slew of questions that I had. You know, one thing I'm curious about is, Sean, you also have ways of measuring or quantifying in-ear monitors as well as over-the-ear or on-ear headphones. Can you tell us about how you – well, you showed us a contraption earlier. I guess that's for in-ear monitors, yeah?
Yeah, so this is how we measure them currently. We you can see there's a little conical volume there, and this is a standard IEC 711 coupler, and we put the headphone, the in-ear in there, and then we put a standard pressure, and we just simply measure the frequency response. And typically the repeatability is very good because you typically get a very good seal, so the bass response is good, and we'll measure it several times, but typically the first measurement is good enough.
You mentioned a good seal. You know, when you buy most in-ear monitors, they come, well, the off-the-shelf ones come with, you know, small, medium, and large rubber thingies that go on there. How do I choose which one? The one that it doesn't fall out?
Yeah. Basically, most in-ear headphones today are sold with five or six different size ear tips, and you just basically keep trying the ones until you get a good seal. And listen to some music with low bass in it, and if it sounds well balanced and sufficient bass, then you know you have a good seal.
Gotcha. What I've heard of some of these in-ear monitors that had two or even three driving elements. Is that like bass, mid-range, and highs?
Yeah, I mean, some of them have as many as eight or nine. It's if one is good, maybe more is better. I don't know. It certainly helps with the efficiency, I would think, and it might help producing lower distortion. But in my experience so far, it's not really, how many transducers it has doesn't really improve the sound. That's not a factor.
So if you go to the CES show in Las Vegas, the one thing I've noticed is an explosion in the last few years in the number of people offering headphones and the number of headphone designs. I remember a few years ago at CES, I was happening by the Marshall booth, and I don't know much about Marshall, actually. I don't know if somebody's just rented their name, but I have some headphones here that say Marshall on them and supposedly have an imprint of the signature of is it Dr. Jim Marshall, OBE. These were cheap. I got them on from one of those Chinese online wholesale places, and they were $22. And to my ear, they sound pretty marvelous, much better than some headphones I've had that cost quite a bit more. Do you find that they're able to make inexpensive headphones that actually sound good?
Yeah, I think at this point I'm going to ask you to pull up a slide 52.
All right, our producer is going to jump on that. What can we preface while he's looking for it?
Yeah, so this is a test that we just finished yesterday, actually, but it's basically a test of 61 different in-ear headphones. And not all of these have been tested. What we're showing here is a predicted score. So we basically have done a number of tests on actual headphones. We've looked at the measurements, and we have a model that will predict how good it's going to score in a listening test. So it goes from 100, possible score of 100 down to, in one case, below zero. But then, yeah. So the blue curve is the predicted sound quality, and the green bars below are the price of the headphone. And you can see down towards the bottom, there's two headphones. It's actually the same headphone with a different setting, but it's a $3,000 headphone, and it's only scoring 25%. So what we found is when you calculate the correlation between price and sound quality, it's actually almost zero, or in case it's actually negative 0.16. So if you think price guarantees you good sound, you're in for a big surprise.
If you could put that graphic back up for a second, and the ones that predicted to have the best quality, the two very, very best ones are, how much money are we looking at here? Under $50, under $70 or so? Am I reading that right? The far two left green ones.
Yeah, the far left two green ones is actually a headphone that doesn't exist. We just took a $100 in your headphone, and we equalized it to what we believe is the preferred curve. But it doesn't. We could probably get similar sound on a much expensive headphone. So it's not really. It's really what the frequency response is, and if you design a headphone to hit that target curve, it's going to score well.
Oh, does that mean that most headphones and in-ear monitors, if you had the equipment at home to measure this and set an EQ curve with a 31 band or greater equalizer, could you make it sound really good?
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's the case. If you have the capability to measure the headphone and equalize it to a better target, you can make what's the expression? A purse out of a pig's,
yeah,
pig's ear.
A purse out of a sow's ear. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. But the airlines don't frown on me bringing a 31-band equalizer, two of them, on the plane. So so what we really want is headphones that perform well just on their own. Wow. So the price fact, correlation, the correlation between quality and price was 0.16. That's not very good correlation, is it?
No.
Wow.
No, in fact, if you pull up slide 43.
43. What's that going to talk about?
So here this was an earlier study where we measured 15 different commercial in-ear headphones, and the blue curve is the target. That's what people prefer. And the frequency response of the other ones, you can see they're all over the map. And generally, they have a little too much bass, and they have too much energy between 100 and 500 hertz.
Yeah.
And what that does is make voices and instruments where those fundamentals fall sound very muddy and chesty and tubby and not very clear. And so
the black lines that we're looking at there, that's the actual measured. And I looked like most of them had a lot of peakiness at various places in the high end.
Yeah. So that's the challenge.
Yeah. Is that caused by the driver size self-resonating and such?
It's a combination of driver resonance and how they're tuned. These are probably mostly balanced armatures. So there's certain things you can do to tune it. There's sound ports and there's various things. And tuning it and dampening these resonances to sort of match that curve is a bit of a engineering challenge. This is one of the reasons why I think wireless or powered headphones with a DSP chip in them are really an advantage, because you can electrically equalize the design to fit that curve.
Oh, okay. So would a DSP chip be programmed and be set in place for that model and that mechanical design? Or could a DSP chip actually monitor a little microphone in there and on a dynamic adaptive basis make the headphone sound like what's coming in to the circuit?
Yeah, that's definitely the cheaper option is to actually get it right before it leaves the factory and measure it and design it so it has a good response. But in practice, when people go, if the headphone didn't fit properly and it was leaking, having real time DSP might be very useful and beneficial.
So there's been some controversy in among my friends in the broadcast world. Maybe Chris would chime in on this about noise, active noise canceling headphones. A lot of times broadcast engineers are called to go to a horrible place to adjust audio processing, and that's the transmitter site. And the transmitter site mm-hmm. is typically very noisy with lots of big blowers and air handlers. And if you're not blowing air through the building, you've got big air conditioners. And so it's not a great place to do that. And that's why so many audio processors have remote controls. You can sit in the comfort of your car or your home and adjust the audio processor. But I got to where I was taking active noise canceling, ANC, headphones to transmitter sites and getting what I thought were pretty good results. At first, I used the Bose Quiet Comfort, and then I moved over to, I think I have some Audio-Technica noise-canceling ones that were pretty nice, and you recommended, I believe Harman owns AKG, right?
Right.
Yeah, and you said we have an AKG model that actually works pretty well.
You do or we do?
You do. I don't own one of those yet. I'm thinking about ordering.
Yeah, so... Well, it depends on, my current favorite for traveling are these. This is the AKG N60, and I like them because they fold like this.
Oh, yeah.
So they fit it. Yeah, so for traveling, I got my wife a pair of these, and we can travel together on the plane and be in total silence. And they're the battery lasts, I don't know, 20 hours, and... And they basically give you about 20 dB or so of attenuation below a kilohertz, where that's where most of the plane noise happens. So it's a pretty good option. And the other option, of course, is an in-ear headphone, which if it has a good seal, you can get even better noise isolation across the entire audio bandwidth. Most of these only work up to a kilohertz. So you're still going to hear voices, which, you know, maybe is a good thing if someone's telling you to move or the plane is about to crash. but yeah, these are good. If you want to spend more money, this is our top of the line AKG. It's called the N90. And it's about $1,200 to $1,500, but this has excellent noise cancellation. It's a active headphone. Which you usually need to do ANC, and it has even better noise isolation because it's an over-the-ear headphone. The cup goes around your ear. You get very good passive isolation as well, which is something you don't really get with a headphone that sits on your ear.
Help me understand a bit about the design of noise-canceling headphones, and I'm guessing you don't design them, but you probably have looked at them pretty closely. Each cup has a microphone. Are those mics on the inside of the cup, or are they pointing out to the outside world?
I mean, they're typically inside the cup, and mm-hmm. And basically, it's on the inside, and it's on the outside, and there may be one inside as well, and you basically measure the noise. You want to separate the noise from the music that you're hearing inside the headphone, and then you create the opposite polarity signal, and you try to cancel it. And if you do the job well, you can get 20-25 dB of attenuation. The challenge is it's to cancel noise. It's mostly at low frequencies where the wavelengths are very long that you can do this, and at very short wavelengths, there's just too much variation and change to be effective. So above about a kilohertz, you really rely on passive isolation, which means the cup has to seal well and keep out outside noise.
Wow.
One of the interesting things is in the last year or so, people. They want ANC, but they want the option to be able to hear ambient noise outside. If they're walking down a street, they want to be able to hear a car. They may want to hear a conversation, and they don't want to take off their headphones. So, we've come up with this idea. It's called Ambient Aware, and this is the JBL Elite 700, and it has microphones on the outside that will allow in. There's three different modes where you can allow less or more noise from outside. It's called ambient aware. So you don't have to take the headphones off. You can control it with your smartphone, or there's a button on the side here, and you have the option of allowing outside sounds to come in so that, you know, it's really safer and more flexible.
Hmm. And absolutely needed in Amsterdam, so you can maybe hear the bicycle coming before you cross the bike path. Wow. So there's a mic on the outside that's ported onto the inside when you turn that function on, and that's how you hear outside.
Right.
Better. Wow, amazing.
So you it has very good ANC, but also this ambient aware, so you can hear sounds from outside when you want.
Chris Tobin, feel welcome to chime in, but I wanted to ask about listening to most of us who have a smartphone, an iPod, whatever. We're probably listening to music that has been bitrate reduced in some way, or as we say, coded, or some people say compressed. So probably, you know, if you buy any music nowadays, it's typically AAC. Typically, it's at 128 or 256 kilobits, which isn't bad. Maybe MP3, which struggles at 128. I have personally noticed that some earphones and earbuds, in-ear monitors that I've had, sound especially bad with coded audio. But with linear audio, they sound, I guess, fine. But other headphones I've had, the same coded audio, I thought sounded, you know, pretty good. And I'm wondering what interaction there may be, or if it's just something irritating in that particular headphone or in-ear monitor that I had that was promoting any unhappiness in the coded audio. I'm not having a very good time saying that, but I think you know what I mean. Hey, these don't sound good on coded audio. What's going on? Can you give me any insight to that?
Sure.
There we go.
My monitor went to sleep. Yeah, so there have been some studies, I think, published in the AAS journal where researchers looked at the audibility of codec artifacts with speakers, through speakers in a room, in a car, and through headphones. And what they found is that certain type of artifacts, particularly ones like pre-echo, temporal type artifacts, were more audible in headphone conditions than speaker in a room. And you know, the reason behind that is that anytime there's a temporal delay, it's more audible over monitoring conditions where there's not masking, temporal masking from reflections. So codecs, certain types of artifacts may actually be more audible over headphones, which is ironic because at least a few years ago, most of the poor quality audio made over codecs was listened to through headphones on portable devices.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. Hey, Chris Tobin, I'm just about out of questions right now. Well, there's a lot more we could go way in depth to. If you have any questions for us, Chris.
None of those questions. Just an observation. I think the headphones with the noise canceling capability and the external microphone would be ideal for remote broadcasts, on location broadcasts, and even in the studio, you know, for announcers who have to take the headphones off to talk to someone and have a conversation off microphone. It makes very convenient. I like that. I like that option. But I've had success with those noise canceling headphones, the newer ones. Some of the first generation headsets, as Kirk, you pointed out, the sound quality was probably questionable at times. I've been at transmitter sites where I've had to do audio work, both TV and radio, and sometimes people look at me like I'm nuts, but I take an overcoat, throw it over my head with the headphones on, and it actually helps a lot. It looks funny, but does acoustically the job that I need. So, for a tidbit, I know it's crazy, but if you're someone who's got to do secure communications and stuff, they have those special tents they use for those skiffs, you know. But for acoustics, I just use an overcoat, and it works out very well.
Sean, would you? I have an observation, and maybe your data would disprove it. I don't know. I earlier in the show I pointed out these headphones. The name is Fotive, Photive, and they're inexpensive. I mean, like they're under $40, I think. Bluetooth connected headphones, and I got some kind of special deal for $10. And so I'll spend $10. I have been absolutely delighted with the way they sound. I can listen to them for hours and not hear bad habits, except for a little scratchiness of, you know, Bluetooth if my body gets too much in the way between the phone and the headphones. And so they're doing something right with the transducer here, and I have no idea what it is. I've also been pretty happy with these Audio-Technica noise-canceling headphones. I've worn them out. I've had to put black cable ties to hold them together here. They've been on a lot of plane trips to India and Australia and so forth. But apparently, I listen too loud and I busted one of the drivers rattles now. So that's takes some pleasure away.
That's really loud.
I didn't think it was that loud. My question though would boil down to. We saw earlier that price and quality are not very related, but do you think that consumers have a better chance of getting good in-ear monitors or earbuds or headphones? Will things get better, or are we still going to be are there still going to be plenty of charlatan companies out there selling just absolute junk for as much money as they can sell it for? What's your outlook on the marketplace where we can enjoy buying something and being happy or not happy with our purchase?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you just have to look at loudspeakers 20, 30 years ago. There was, they were all over the map. And we through science and research, we learned what people like and how to measure it. And of course, now measurement equipment is much less money than it was 20 years ago. So I see the same thing happening with headphones. I think with the research that we do, we publish it. It's in the public domain as more and more people are aware of it and read it. And if it gets put into standards, right now the broadcast standards for headphones are not they won't get you necessarily good sound. So I think it's just a matter of time before the headphones get better and that the variations between the worst and the best get smaller. I think we're past this age where you go to China, you get someone to make it, and you go hire a celebrity. I think people are very cynical about that, and for good reason. And I think the better companies, I think there'll probably be fewer and fewer companies. There'll be a consolidation. And headphones, I see big things coming with virtual reality and augmented reality. And headphones become wearable with sensors in them. So they'll do more than just make sound. They'll measure your heart rate. They'll have media players built in. And so I see those types of headphones really driving the market. Right now, wireless headphones have over half the market. So people are cutting the cord, and they want them to be more and more part of their lifestyle.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Hey, we've got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with our tips of the week from Chris and from me, and also from Sean Olive. I can't wait for Sean's. Chris usually has something pretty good too, and I may even have something this week. Our show is brought to you in part by the Telos Alliance and the e-newsletter the one that you need to get. It's called Direct Current. Take it away.
Not much in the paper today, is there?
Yeah, not much. Seems tough to stay informed, you know?
Like we're missing out on stuff, important stuff.
Yeah, feels like week-old news, yesterday's stories. Half the tech stuff in here seems out of date by the time I see it.
What Kirk doesn't know is I'm way ahead of everyone else around here. Every Thursday, I get this newsletter in my email. It's Direct Current. The folks at the Telos Alliance publish this.
What Joe doesn't know is I keep one step ahead of the radio guys in this market. Every Thursday, I get Direct Current from the folks at the Telos Alliance. It's a free newsletter about radio engineering, audio, streaming, studios, everything.
Thursday afternoons, we have our department head meeting. I look like a genius, thanks to the knowledge, updates, and advice in Direct Current. Sometimes I wonder if I should tell Kirk about Direct Current. Might help him out.
I wonder if I should let Joe in on my secret. He could use a little help sometimes.
Get Direct Current in your inbox every Thursday. Read profiles of engineers and newsmakers in the broadcast community. Get technical pointers putting you and your facility at an advantage. Important industry news and views. Plus, you'll be up to date on Telos, Omnia, Axia, and ZipStream products. It's all here in the Direct Current newsletter. Subscribe online at telosalliance.com/directcurrent. That's telosalliance.com/directcurrent.
I got mine today. Maybe you get yours if you're signed up for it. Check it out at telosalliance.com/directcurrent. All right, Mr. Sean Olive, we're looking forward to a tip that'll help us out. What you got for us?
Yeah. Well, if you're considering buying a headphone, number one, try it. Make sure it's comfortable. Make sure it fits you well. So if you make sure they have a return policy. So try it out for a couple of weeks. If it fits well and you like the sound, then go for it. As far as the sound goes, what I personally do is I have Tidal music on my phone, and I have a playlist which I use to addition cars, headphones, loudspeakers. And thirdly, right now the kind of measurements that I've shown you today are not readily available, but check out innerfidelity.com. They actually do measure. They have a large database of headphones. And if you know what the target should look like, just look at their measurements and try to find a headphone that comes close to these targets. And I guarantee it'll sound good.
All right. Good advice, especially the trying out. That's so important. Yeah. Earbuds may be a little tougher, but I did find a place in the airport that would let you try them out, at least in the store. And they would wipe clean with alcohol the little tips. So you can try them out. Good deal. The charts that you showed us today, will they be available publicly in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I can make you can go to my blog to find a lot of these graphs, or I can make these charts available. I already gave you a link. I can just, if you want to make that publicly available, that's fine.
If they're on your blog, then I'll just in the show notes, we'll put a link to your blog. Folks can go there and read the context and see them as well. I think I looked at that blog a few days ago, too.
Yeah.
All right, good. Great. Chris Tobin, tip of the week. What you got for us, buddy?
All righty. Well, since we're talking headphones and whatnot, whoops, let me go this way. Here's what I've been doing lately. I've done it for several years, but I'm doing it more so now. Since headphones can be somewhat of a troublesome thing with the connector, where the wire gets bent over from sitting in plugged into a console or other devices, I've made these little extensions. Quarter inch plug to a quarter inch jack, adapters, just about 3 or 4 inches length. And this way the announcers can plug into that adapter and their headphone connector doesn't get stressed. So you don't get those annoying, if you will, visits, say, can you fix my headphones? When I wiggle the wire, the right channel comes back. It sort of takes, it's like a strain relief. It's a homemade strain relief, but I'll tell you, it has saved me a lot of trouble, and it works out really well. It also puts less stress on the headphone jack on your console. Come on now, you know for a fact that many of these guys, when they place their headphones into the jack, they pound it in as if that makes better contact for better sound. As we talked about, marketing is a better choice, but you know, that's one of my suggestions. So that's what I would go with. It's since we're talking headphones, it works really well.
Good deal. And I've got a tip quickly. I read about this in an article from the Audio Authority, Wired Magazine. Okay. Well, anyway, they were recommending things that were good values. And one of them, they said a sleeper value on the market were these in-ear headphones from a company that calls themselves ATE. And they had a link. Amazon had a couple of them, so I bought two, one as a gift and one for myself. They're okay. They're certainly okay. They're supposed to be tangle-free cords, and yet all they do is get tangled. They look like this. They're in-ear monitors. I'm having a little trouble figuring out how to wrap the wire over the top of my ear like they show, and I'm just not very good at that. But what I really wanted you to hear, it's the instruction, it's the well wishes on the side of the package, okay? Tiny, tiny writing. I'll leave you with this. Honorific customer, thank you. Choose the KZ headphones to experience the acclaimed hi-fi audio. So there you go. Oh, and yeah, and on the back, it's almost as good. Powerful bass and sensitive sound details bring wonderful delight of Aural. A-U-R-A-L. Aural. Yeah, there you go. I'll put a link to these in the show notes to where I got them on Amazon. So you can enjoy some. I think they were $15. And, hey, they're a lot better than $15 airport in-ear monitors. All right. Hey, our show has been brought to you by the folks at Lavo, at BSW, Broadcast Supply Worldwide, and the Telos Alliance with the Direct Current e-newsletter. So there you go. We want to thank Sean Olive. Sean, thank you so much for spending an hour with us. It's been delightful.
My pleasure. Anytime.
I learned a lot. Made me think about a lot of new things. Chris Tobin, are you okay, buddy?
I am absolutely fine. I'm a little parched. I seem to have finished my glass of nectar.
Waiter!
Sorry. Oh, garçon, I need
Oh gosh!
Oh goodness! Right. No, I learned a lot. Sean, your information, your talk, the research you've done is excellent. It's spot on, and it's actually helped me to think about some new approaches to headphone use in various environments. So I really appreciate it. It's really, really good.
Thank goodness for people like Sean Olive to do this kind of stuff we wonder about and don't have time to wonder about. And Sean gets to research it thoroughly. All right. Thanks very much to Sean, Chris, and Suncast, our producer for the show. Thanks also to Andrew Zarian. You may have seen him pop in the picture every now and then during the show. Andrew, howdy. Hope the family's well, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. And we'll see you too, Chris, in a couple of weeks. Coming up next week, well, we got another guest. I'm not sure who it is. I didn't have time to look at it, but it'll be another great show. Tell your friends about our show. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.